This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
You have your coffee, don't you? And this is The Deep Dive, and I am your host, Brooke Spector. And I see, I can see, unfortunately, listeners can't see, my guest, Warren Luciane, and she's got a nice big cup of coffee or tea and a bright, bright orange cup with her. Right there, I can see it. Looks great. I'm really pleased to be able to do this with her. I'm sorry, last week we couldn't. I had a medical emergency in my family, and so we were drawn off of our normal schedule, but we are, I think, back on. Warona's done all kinds of things, and we're talking to her today especially because she's directing or has directed and is now watching the effect of Master Harold and the Boys at the Theater on the Square, at Sandton Square. And it's one of those important plays in South Africa that has had a worldwide resonance. And it's an intimate drama. It takes place in a tea room in Port Elizabeth in the early 1960s or late 1950s. Three people.
1950.
1950s, okay. And it's the interplay is fascinating. Let me just mention that Warona has done lots of television. She's been the artistic director at the Soweto Theater. She's been an instructor and a development program director in universities. And this time around, she's taken what I think is one of the real peaks of South African theater and to make it her own, as opposed to all the people who have been here before. And this, of course, is Athol Fugard, the late Athol Fugard, who just passed away, Master Harold and the Boys. I'm going to introduce this by saying that about 9-10 years ago, I talked with Rona about another effort that she did. She directed an opera, a short opera. Honey, you're smiling. I can see that. That's nice. Based on the final agonies of Chris Honey, and this was performed at the Soweto Theater. I guess it was 2015.
Yes.
And I asked her, given the fact that opera was not her natural métier, it wasn't the thing that she had done all her life up to that point. And she said to me, because of the new territory and the nerves that accompany saying yes to such a challenge, I read a lot around about how the opera community sees itself and the form. I listened to the music a lot. But also the libretto speaks of the Fama de Hana, a Madagascan tradition of exhuming loved ones, cleaning the remains and reburying them. And so I searched for sources on that tradition. I loved working on this production very much. I found it excitingly challenging. And I would mention that the music was composed by an old friend, Bongani Endodana Breen, who has done all manner of interesting choral and instrumental music. Master Harold and the Boys is not new territory for the theater. It's been performed many times in South Africa. It's been performed abroad. I think it was Athol Fugard's first play that premiered overseas. And it's been filmed twice. And one of the versions had the late Ramalal Makene and John Connie as two of the actors. That's a fairly redoubtable pair of performers, to be sure. It even got the honor of being banned under the old regime at one point. I mean, I guess you put that on your resume. My work has been banned. And so the question to you, and I, again, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Why take on a work that is so often done or has been done so significantly, and why doing it again? What does it talk to now as opposed to when Fugard wrote it or when other people have seen it?
Okay, so thank you, Brooks, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here and to be talking about this work and anything else, really. So this work came to me unlike most of the work that I do. I was commissioned by the producers to do it, and it was already cast and all of that. So it took me a while to find my why. But ultimately, when I found my why, I was really quite moved. So as you know, or probably would know, the play is kind of semi-autobiographical about an experience that Fugard had when he was a teenager with somebody who was a very important person in his life. And that kind of severed ties for him. And so my why was really based around a monologue that he writes for Sam in the play about collisions in the world and how small collisions can actually become so big that they create an explosion. And my thing was looking at really how do we manage these small collisions? How do we... What is the task of people in a relationship to maintain the relationship amidst all these collisions? And so that for me seemed like a good way to go, exploring this relationship of this young white boy with a black man in 1950 in apartheid South Africa, in East London, in Port Elizabeth, and how the world sort of infringes upon their small intimate space and ultimately wins in destroying their relationship. So for me, really, it was about the three relationships as well, with Willie as well not being what I've found him to continuously be cast as a caricature, mere comic relief without a life of his own. And so working with understanding that these two men had lives of their own outside of this boy, and that they were actually in service of this boy in teaching him to grow up to be a man. However, the world came into the mix and ruptured that relationship.
One of the things about many of Fugard's plays, and I think you're touching on that, it's always an intimate relationship between two, or in this case, three people at a stretch. And the world's out there. I mean, the violence and the difficulties and the challenges and the traumas of the old regime are right outside the door of this tea room. But inside, there is this triangular relationship between two men and a young teenager, and Fugard always manages to find that small intersection between the people, and through that, then explaining that outside world. And that's something that every time I see one of his works, I always find that fascinating.
He does that. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
He does that really well with this, because he really he structures the microaggressions in such a way that they become really unavoidable and unbearable towards the point of rupture. Do you know what I mean? So, and all of them are certainly they feel like they're coming from outside up until such a point when the boy then kind of embodies it all.
I'm going to have to interrupt, and the ICASA and the station and the sponsors, we have to pay our dues to all those people. And we'll do a short station break and a commercial message, and we'll be right back with our conversation with director Warona Siane, who is directing Master Harold and the Boys at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Are we live? Yes, we are indeed. We are back, and I am indeed who that voice said was here. And this is the Deep Dive, and our guest today is Warona Siane, who has directed Master Harold and the Boys at the Fugards, one of his masterpieces, really, at the Sandton Theater on the Square. We were talking just before the break about the inner tensions and the microaggressions. I like that phrase that you used, that are within the relationships. When Fugard passed away, many critics observed that Fugard shows all that. He shows all those difficulties and dangers and problems and challenges, but he also gives everybody a little bit of hope. There is a shaft of light that comes through somewhere, somehow, to say it doesn't always have to be this way. There is a possible different way. And he doesn't tell you how to get there, but he lets you know that there is a possibility. When you chose to direct this, or when you accepted the commission, I guess, did you feel challenged by the fact that so many other people had been here before, that some really strong productions had taken place before, and that there were deep footprints, I guess is what I'm trying to say, for this work. And your challenge was not simply just take the same steps, but put your own stamp on it. Is that fair to say?
I wasn't challenged by the productions that happened before, because unfortunately I hadn't seen it live before. Wow. I hadn't and I consume theater, but I hadn't seen it live. And so I thought, okay, this is good. I don't have a reference of a production I've seen directed by someone that I respect, and do you know what I mean? Yeah. But all the actors who have taken part in it, I have so much respect for. So I haven't seen a production. I'd only seen students doing it. Even when I was a student, some of my friends did scenes from it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So when I approached it, I was approaching it from the perspective of, this is a play from 1950, well, set in 1950, written in the 1980s, and we're watching it in 2025. And so how have we moved as a society from the 1980s to now? What has shifted? Have our thoughts around racial relations shifted at all? Are there things that can be said and can't be said, that used to be said and can't be said now? Like, for example, the K word, I did not want Daniel to say that word ever in our presence. And so we had to find a device around that. Mm-hmm. But Sam and Willie use the word. So a whole lot of things. Yes, there is hope, but at the end, I didn't want Hallie to get off scot-free. He did something terrible. And so
for people who haven't seen it yet or don't know it, neither of us are going to tell people what that is.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what it is. I don't like spoiling stories for people. And he did something terrible that I didn't want him to get off scot-free, but there had to be an understanding that Sam had to kind of come out victorious in some way. And this is reflected in his relationship with Willie. But also, I didn't want Willie to not be a human. Because oftentimes when I've read, I found that he wasn't given a lot of backstory and all of that. So we worked a lot on creating the backstory, a lot on making sure that that even in his silence, there's a lot happening so that the audience is looking at him and seeing themselves in a sense. So he became kind of like our chorus. He represented, he was commentary, the commentary that we wanted to give as the audience to this relationship, but we're not able to because we were not in the room with them. And I'm glad that for some people it's reading as that, because I find that quite encouraging. And
one of the things about this play, again without spoiling it for people who have yet to see it, and I have not seen this production yet because we had that emergency, but I will get to it this week or at the very latest before it ends. There are two relationships, basically there are two important relationships. One is between the young boy, Hallie, and Sam, mm-hmm. who is busy teaching him how to be a man in mm-hmm. really desperate circumstances, how to grow. And then there is the relationship between the two African staff members in the tea room who are, of all things, practicing ballroom dancing, which is not something you expect two grown men to be doing. People tell me, of course, back in the 50s, ballroom dancing really was a big thing. And lots of people did learn it, maybe more so than now. But Fugard's always been wonderful at creating those didactic or pedagogical moments without coming out and saying, pay attention now, boys and girls, here's the lesson for today.
I mean, what's also interesting is that Fugard's Sam, his 17-year-old, Ethel Fugard's 17-year-old Sam, was a ballroom dance instructor in New Brighton. So he didn't draw from too far away from what his experience was. But also the lessons are really, so it throughout, it seems like the little teenage boy is like this amazing teacher and instructor. But only later do you realize that there's been teaching that's been happening both ways. And a lot of it has been to his benefit. He's been sort of cradled in this relationship where he can do no wrong, and he is really treated as a child, and he's listened to, and his views are given space to grow, which is something that he doesn't really receive so much at home. And another thing that Fugard does, as you obviously probably know, is these invisible characters that just have such a huge life. Hallie's parents, particularly his father, you never see them, but they are such strong forces in the story, and they create such twists and turns in the story that they might as well be in the room with you. And Fugard does this a lot.
Hamlet's ghost. I hadn't thought about it quite that way, and now that you forced me to rethink each of the Fugard plays in a quick succession. And you're right; there's always an invisible character just beyond the curtain, and it's almost as if the characters you do see are looking in that direction to find out what do they think about what I just did, said, or will say. Let me turn this a little bit away from the play itself to the process of directing. You have a fairly well-known lead actor in this production, man who's performed internationally, well-known in this country for all manner of things, Selo Maka Kanube. Did you have any difficulties in working with a strong cast?
No. No, I love independent, intelligent performers. I love because that means that the rehearsal process, people come with proposals. They're not sort of just waiting to be told what to do. You know what I mean? And I enjoy that a lot because then it just enriches the process so much, and the production itself so much. And the three of them, Sello, Makekan Mube, Lebohang Motaung, and Daniel Anderson, are such strong, generous performers that every single day there would be some new proposal that comes in, and we're like, actually, let's use that. Let's keep that. Let's try and fix it in this way and that. But we're keeping remnants of that offer and all of that. So it was really, I don't want to say easy. It wasn't an easy process, but working with them was not like, oh my goodness, these experienced people, how am I? It was really quite exciting to be working with professionals, because for the past 7 years, really, well, except for a year ago, but I've been working with students. So yeah, it was really nice to work with professionals again, and also so intimately. And what I was saying to them was, what was strange for me was mostly my work has been, like my professional work, has really been about working with women. And to be working with a cast of all males was something that was very new for me. So if anything, it would be that. But it was always clear that the intimacy and the relationships of the men were the core thing that I was going to work with, along with realism. Yeah.
Well, that's why I led in our conversation. That's why I led off with that quote from you, in respect of a very different production, that here was something that was not your métier, that was not your familiar territory, and that you grabbed a hold of a challenge and then tried to make it your own, even though obviously the work is what the work is, and you can't simply just rewrite it. I mean, it's 20 some minutes long or something. And the music is written, the libretto is written, the acting is written. And of course the historical circumstance has already been realized.
In which
the story takes place. So what I'm hearing from you is that you actually like the idea of having to stretch a little bit rather than dealing with the comfortable and the familiar and the I know this place feeling.
Yeah, it does something to you, right? It challenges your creativity. You get to dream from a different place. I remember our designer, Wilhelm Desbergen.
Also after a good dream, yeah.
The amazing designer, and I love working with Wilhelm. And we also worked with him on Hani. But this time around, he was saying, somebody said to him, oh my, this is so real. And he was like, I hate realism. I only do it when I'm working with Warona. And I was like, actually, it's very demanding. Realism is very demanding. And especially when I have this thing of, no, we even if we're poor, and this is for the work I'm talking about, process here, not socially. Even if we're poor, we're stylishly poor. You know, the set is stylish. The everything is taken care of in a way that is stylishly poor. Yes, you know. And so the how we sourced the cutlery, the minuscule details of that tea room was to represent how much work Hallie's mother had put into actually creating a successful business that is not successful. So she was being represented as well, even though she wasn't physically in the space. So things like that, realism is very challenging. It's very challenging. It demands a lot of, even though you're looking at the given circumstances, you still have to go just a bit above and beyond to represent people you assume you know, but you're actually, they're actually fiction.
You actually created a tea room, a struggling tea room that's better than the tea rooms that are struggling.
Yeah, essentially. That's the intention.
Somebody's going to steal this set design and open up a coffee shop that uses
They better credit Wilhelm with it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even so, it could be fun. Just as we saw in, here it is. Okay. We're going to take another quick station break and we'll be right back. You're going to do what we have discussed and we'll be, this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Warona Siane, who is a well-known actor, creator, and now the director of Master Harold and the Boys at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. We'll be right back after all these messages and all these other things. We want to continue this conversation.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Out of me sometimes. Okay. Discover the delightful symphony of flavors at Friend Bakery in Sandringham. Every Friday, indulge in fresh baked flavored challahs like za'atar, homemade, and classic loaves, all perfect for our Shabbat. Try the V Friends Bakery new pretzel challah. You'll be a fan. For a limited time, enjoy free taster samples when you purchase your challah. Place your order easily via WhatsApp at 076-108-0085 and taste the difference that has everyone's taste buds buzzing. Visit Friends Bakery in Sandringham today and treat your taste buds to something extraordinary. And we are back with our guest, Warona Siane, director of Master Harold and the Boys at the Sandton Theater on the Square. Warona, let me ask you this about this production, if I might. It's been a while since it's been on stage in a professional theater in South Africa, and I suspect younger audience members may never have seen it live. What kind of reaction are you getting? Because Daphne has set up this theater that she has so that people are funneled out of it afterwards into a room in which they almost have to talk to each other. And have a drink. I mean, you can't escape it because you can't get out the door. What kind of reactions is this play eliciting from its audiences?
There's a lot of incredulity. The people just don't believe what they're hearing from the 17-year-old. They start off really, and it's great that they like him when he first arrives, you know? And then they're like, but why is he saying that? Why is he saying that? I was watching last night and we had students from AFTA. And by the end of the play, they were calling for violence against Ali. Do you know what I mean? But also I've had some people say that they recognize themselves in Ali. Not necessarily being complicit in racial terms, but in class terms, and how they've responded to older members and their families in ways that highly responds to these older men. So there's been a lot of different responses. The young people are enjoying it, I think, but also they're sort of the energy of, we cannot be accepting this kind of treatment in 2025 kind of comes up a lot. And I'm grateful for that because that's what we were aiming to do, the four of us, when we were rehearsing this piece, was that we wanted to show the clashes that create the disconnection that we still experience together in the country. And so those clashes, if we're aware of them, if we're aware of how they're formed, if we are aware that this child, this 17-year-old boy, was essentially instructed to become the person he becomes at the end of the play, and not just by his father, but by the teachers in the school, by the system in the school, by the history that they're taught, that we're going to keep struggling to connect to each other. And so I think they're getting that. I hope at least the ones that are talking to me are saying that that's how they're feeling. So yeah, that's, yeah.
Do audience members, some of them come out, perhaps who didn't know the play intimately or deeply, do they come out a little bit shell-shocked at the way in which the relationship devolves? Again, without spoiling the moment, do they wander out sort of like, whoa, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it happen in the room. You know, you hear it. You hear as the microaggressions start to become really quite aggressive. you hear it in the responses in the audience. And the moment when, yeah, and I can't speak to the moment, but there's two particular moments where the audience is just like, no, actually, no, no, no. And where I'm grateful that both performers were willing to go that far in honoring the text itself, but also for themselves as performers live on stage, allowing for that kind of a relationship to actually happen, that kind of violence to actually happen between them, and still be able to, because that's what I was concerned about holding the actors together but still honoring the story and its violence. And it doesn't seem violent, right? It's just in a tea room on a rainy day or whatever. But honoring that violence that's in the text, but still maintaining some kind of a strong, solid relationship between the two performers who are clashing against each other. That it's not them as humans clashing against each other. It's these characters. And for these characters to ring true, they've got to go through all of that. And for them to give in to those two experiences, I'm very grateful for that.
I'm trying to think of all the different Fugard plays I've seen over the years. And this is really one of the few, or maybe the only one, in which there's that kind of really deep, deep anger and resentment and ultimately violence. Usually the violence is verbal, saying things that cut to the bone, perhaps. And the shock of having said something makes the other character respond in a way which is even angrier and more deeply felt. But, you know, nobody ever dies on a Fugard play stage. Unlike Shakespeare, all kinds of people, all the time. You know,
everyone dies.
The bodies pile up after dying. How do you deal with actors who then have to go off stage and then come back like a minute later, take a bow, you know, embrace and, you know, wave to their friends after all this?
I mean, I'm hoping that our process allowed for them to get to that point. Do you know what I mean? Because our process is still ongoing with their warm-ups and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that our process has helped them. But I'm not gonna know that. I'm not gonna know that for sure until the final show. And I cannot step in right now while it's in the process of evolving. Because they're discovering a lot more, and they and they're doing a lot more than we were doing in rehearsal, because they're giving each other the opportunity, they're giving each other the permission, the consent to do so. And so it's amazing to observe. And honestly, I didn't expect for them to be so open about it, but they are. And it's working in such a good way that I only want to deal with it, honestly, at the after the final show, kind of a debriefing of sorts, so that we understand that these two actors can continue life and meet next time in another production and still continue to work together.
Yeah. I think it's, in some ways, it's pretty brave on the part of Daphne to do this, to put this play on her stage. It's not her usual fare, although she's done lots of contemporary South African works. This one is a little, should we say, not the word deeper, but a little bit more challenging, emotionally challenging.
When I look at the walls, they did one some years back. I don't remember what year it was. That was directed by James Ngobo.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. And I think this, it was because it's a co-production with the Senlomakeka Ncube Foundation. I think they kind of worked together on finding the piece, if you understand what I mean. So... So I think, both of them, as the producers, decided that this would be the one for them.
I am going to take another commercial message. We have to do this. It's important. It's good for customers. It's good for the station. It's good for listeners. Attention, small business owners. Boost your brand with an unbeatable advertising deal on 101.9 High FM. Get 5 ads per day for 5 days for just 5,000 Rand. This stimulus campaign is perfect for businesses looking to make a splash. Don't miss out on this exclusive opportunity to reach your audience and grow your business. Are you interested? Email info@chaifm.com, that's chaifm.com, or text 061-895-1019. Today.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
We're back, and this is the Deep Dive. I am, as the announcer said, Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today, Warren Osiane, veteran stage, film, TV, actor, director, coach, teacher, instructor, and now directing Master Harold and the Boys at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. When does this run until? What is the last day you can see this?
The last day of the performance is the 29th of June.
So there's you folks, everyone listening still has 9 days left to go see this play.
Yes.
And I heard the critical reviews electronically and elsewhere have been very, very flattering and very, very insightful about the quality of the work and its lessons. But let me pose this to you. This is a play written back in the early 1980s at a time which was pretty tough in this country for most of the people who lived here. It's about something which took place metaphorically 30 years before that, in the shaping of the adulthood, the will-be adulthood of the playwright, since it's based considerably on his own life and experiences. But now you're performing it, or it's being performed, directed by you, in 2025. This is a different country in a different world. Why do it now? What are the lessons? What are the guideposts that it is offering people now? And I say that because when I saw a production a few years back that says "We Bonzi is Dead," also by Athel Fugard in partnership with John Connie and Winston and Shona, the audience was very young, and the play takes place at a time obviously before most of the audience's birth. And people came out of that one whispering to each other, I don't believe that was the social circumstances. I don't believe that could have happened. And of course, it was the social circumstances. So what lessons, what guideposts, what pathways, what illuminations does this play offer us now?
I suppose, yes, it's 2025 and, you know, it's been 30 years, 31 now, years since our independence. But I don't think the human condition is a strange one, because as much as laws and things like that can shift, humans take a long time to change. We like our traditions. We like, regardless of whether they're good for us or not, we like things that make us feel more important than others. And so I think what this sheds light on is the fact that Helly would not be able to continuously state the things that he's stating without any repercussions if he was stating them now. Okay, and but in 1950, there was no way the two men could do anything about it. And so I think my thing about it is to learn that there's only so much collision you can have with people before you have to face the consequences of what you're creating. And then you have to decide for yourself whether you're continuing with the way that you are treating people to end up being alone, or you want to actually mend those collisions and create some kind of a soft landing for all of you. I hope that answered you.
It does. It's going to make me think about it. It's going to make me think about it. I mean, I, in one sense, of course, you could see a play by Aeschylus or something from the classic Greek tradition, and there's still the human condition, and you're still listening to it, and you're going, I got it now. I think I understand. And classic works will do that for you, and this work has become something of a classic. Unfortunately, our time is just about up, and I have to let you go, but it's been a delight to have you as our guest. We've been speaking with Warona Siani, director of Master Harold and the Boys at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. It's still running till the 29th. Go see it. It's well worth it, but be prepared. Be prepared for a shock. Be prepared for an emotional roller coaster. Be prepared to be challenged. This has been Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive, and we'll be back again next week with another topic, another guest, and I hope that you all have a wonderful weekend. You take care.